With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket and the final day of the Lord's Test match, the LV Insurance Test Series between England and India. India are one up. Who would have thought that? What a bizarre day's cricket. What a brilliant day's cricket from an Indian perspective. What a rather sad day from an English perspective. We began the day with England favourites, and by the end, it was only a matter of time before India polished England off. I mean, the range of emotions during the day, the way the game ebbed and flowed, I suppose, in a way, summed up the match overall.
Well, first thing to say, brilliant test match. Absolutely fabulous game of cricket. As you say, that ebbed and flowed and kept us captivated throughout. After the first day, if you said India were going to win this test match, well, I wouldn't have argued with you because I thought that's exactly what was going to happen. After 4 days, I thought England were favourites. India did have a chance still, and the draw was a long way out. But there were, you know, there were times during the day we thought, well, this is going to be a draw. And then India were just absolutely irresistible. Well, firstly with the bat and then with the ball. Brilliant test match. Virat Kohli said it was one of India's best, certainly one of the best that he's been involved with. I mean, I think one of the things about today is they really showed what a good side they are. They brushed England aside. Fantastic display, but what a really chastening day for England that is.
I mean, it really did reveal the England's soft underbelly, which actually, I suppose normally you'd think an underbelly is the middle order, but it was the top order that is the soft bit at the moment. And again, the openers failed to deliver, both openers out for a duck. I mean, we can talk later about what that means for the likes of Dominic Sibley going forwards, but it was an appalling start, as England have become used to, exposing Root again to the new ball and to the pressure. And I also think that India's actual intelligence with the ball rather outshone England on the day. The turning point for the match, and certainly the day, was undoubtedly that partnership between Mohammad Shami and Jasprit Bumrah, two men who average, I think, a combination of 13 with the bat in Test cricket before today. Certainly Bumrah's test batting average is 3. Shami's is about 11, but you know, even he's a little bit probably flattered by that. And they put on 89. And, you know, England just lost the plot. And to Joe Root's great credit, and we'll hear from him in a little while on this podcast, he did actually accept the blame for it, which I thought was, you know, very noble of him in a way.
Well, yeah, really honest interview that he gave to both the BBC and Sky afterwards, saying, yeah, I shoulder the blame, my tactics were wrong. I think what we should do is just deconstruct what those tactics were, Yoz. Basically, India were 182 ahead, 8 down, and what they did was they pushed the field back for Bumrah. There were 6 fielders on the boundary. Now, bear in mind that the ball was relatively new, that England were on top. They got rid of Pant early, which is a really fabulous boost for them, and a beautiful ball as well from Robinson to get rid of Ishant Sharma, a slower ball. And then the field was set back deep.
Here's the field if you're watching on video. Here is the field, which I took from side on the grandstand. And there's, this is extraordinary, isn't it? There were 6 men on the boundary. You can see three men, deep fine leg, deep square leg and deep mid wicket. And there was also a sort of fine third man and 2 men on the offside boundary. So bizarre. Even more strangely, no slip. The only man anywhere near the bat was Joe Root at gully, and everybody else scattered in all directions as if it was Chris Gayle batting. I mean, just bizarre.
Or if it was a 100 match, it was something. What it was, they had just assumed that if they sort of bowled it in at the body of Jasprit Bumrah, he would slog it up in the air. I mean, to be fair, he did have a lot of luck early on. There was a lot of swiping and missing. Balls just missing the bat, going through the wicketkeeper, just missing him. He was clonked on the head twice. And it looked only a matter of time. But, of course, he got a bit of confidence just from staying in. And when everyone's back, you do have the option sometimes of just being able to push one, and that ticks the board over. And it was just gradually going in India's favour. At the other end, Shami, I thought, played splendidly. I mean, that was a fine innings by Mohammad Shami. And the one extra cover drive he played was one of the shots of the match. I mean, it's better than anything Virat Kohli has come up with in this game. It was wonderful batting from Shami, and real common sense as well. But it happened because England had the field back. What's wrong when you've got 9 and 10 out there with the new ball, newish ball, just squeezing, putting some pressure on? Okay, have one man out. Have one man out cow corner for Bumrah if he connects. But is he going to keep on doing it? I don't think so. There was no pressure on him. He did have some luck. They got away, and the cards came down pretty quickly. The old house of cards came down pretty quickly, and the pressure that was on India was straight back on England. As it happened, though, Jos, of course, bizarrely, and I know this is not, you can't always draw this equation when you look at it, is the fact that actually India had enough runs after 4 days. They won this. They bowled England out for 120, and they're 152 ahead. So all that fanning around in the morning session actually, not really irrelevant, because of course what it did was it just changed the whole psychological balance of the game. But it is perverse, isn't it? We thought India didn't have enough runs overnight, but they ended up winning by 151 runs, and England bowled out for 120.
I was sat in a box with some quite famous cricketers, actually, and this, I'm not deliberately name dropping here. I'm just sort of intimating the bafflement on the faces of Mike Brearley, Kumar Sangakkara, and Sourav Ganguly, amongst others, who all just couldn't fathom the tactics England had, with no slip and men scattered all around the boundary and the bowlers charging in to bowl short and at the head, and no balls aimed at the stumps, hardly any balls aimed at the stumps. Now, I have been in that sort of situation before, where you've got 9 and 10 who are not great, but they do occasionally land the bat on the straight ball, and they slice it or skim it or snick it in various odd directions, and you do get quite quickly frustrated. And you think, a couple of short balls, that'll rough them up, and then we can polish them off with a good straight ball. But bowlers leave their basics behind in those situations. There's a red mist sort of descends on you, and you charge in faster and faster, and you bowl more and more short, thinking the batsman's bound to hit one up in the air, and they slice it over the keeper's head or miss it completely, or it ricochets off a bit of the bat or the body for runs. And suddenly you've lost your natural rhythm and you don't stick to the basics. And what often happens, you bowl a couple of good balls, they edge it or miss it, and then you think, well, I'll bowl a Yorker or a bouncer and that'll do them. And actually you lose your basic rhythm and your basic line and length around off stump and start trying other things. And it just gets worse and worse. And then, of course, the batsmen, the tail enders, who've got away with a few lucky edges initially, suddenly think, well, there's no slips here. There's no short legs. I'll just play normally. And they play normally. And actually the partnership starts to develop. There was just a horrible lack of orthodox field settings and straight deliveries hitting the stumps. And you know, it's funny, but when you are in that situation, at times you can't see the wood for the trees. When you're sitting on the sidelines and, you know, you're old and completely knackered, you can see what you should have done.
Yeah, and that goes back to that. Remember that earpiece that, Bob Warmer used with Hansi Cronin in the 99 World Cup? We are going back in the day now. I mean, that idea of someone who's cool on the, you know, and calculated on the touchline, saying to the captain out in the middle, you know, this is what we need to do. And, you know, I think everyone up in the commentary boxes were utterly baffled by what was going on out there in the middle with the field set back. Now, why do you think it happened? I think that one element is that they sort of just, Bumrah had played in that way at Trent Bridge. And he, you know, he was swatting and scything, and you know, you think boundary catch is a reasonable option, but I wonder whether it also had something to do with the fact that on Saturday that Bumrah was bowling short of Jimmy Anderson and he hit him on the helmet. I wonder whether there was a bit of right, and there's a lot of chat out there, there's a lot of needle in this match. Whether there was a bit of we want to get back at him a bit, you know, we want to show him we're not going to be bullied, and you know, I wonder if there was an element of that involved in the tactics as well as thinking, yeah, that's where we're going to get him. We're going to get him swiping court, deep mid wicket, top edge, or deep back of square leg, top edge.
I mean, the trouble is it just becomes a lottery when you have a field like that. And the bowlers haven't got any... When you've got the field scattered in all directions, there's no obvious plan. It's difficult to bowl to that field because there's no sort of obvious route to bowl off or kind of direction to bowl in or length to bowl in because you've got fielders literally in all directions. So, I mean, whether it's you do get consumed by emotion a bit at times, and yeah, there were some words exchanged and you get heated up. And I suppose it's a good example, actually. I said to Mike Brearley at one point, why aren't bowlers captains? And he sort of pointed to what was happening on the field and said, well, you know, you can see that they're getting so wound up that that's probably the reason why bowlers are often, or fast bowlers anyway, are not captains. I mean, it was just a sad hour and a half from an England perspective, absolutely glorious from an Indian perspective, and changed the match completely. And obviously, not only did it give India that cushion of runs, and they could declare just after the interval, but it also gave them momentum, self-belief, and the knowledge that England now couldn't win. And if they hit a couple of good balls early on and got early wickets, there was a great chance India could win, which is what happened.
Yeah, two early wickets. I mean, England were 1 for 2, both Sibley and Burns out for naught. And that's the first time that both England openers have been out for naught in a test match in England. It was a really sorry start. And actually...
The first time ever?
Yeah, the first time. It's happened abroad, but it's really? not happened in this country that the both England openers have been out for naught both openers out for naught in a test match innings. And Virat Kohli was asked, he said, when did you think you could win the match? And he said, when we got those two early wickets. I mean, it's such a lift, isn't it? The whole psychology of the day changed round so quickly. And, you know, England supporters will look back over the, you know, the years of test cricket. You know, some people saying this is one of the worst days for English test cricket ever. And actually the turnaround, it did feel like that. I mean, England were brushed aside, their bowlers brushed aside by India's tail, smacked around, 89 partnership, and then rolled over, steamrolled by India's four-man pace attack. It was sort of brutal and ruthless, and England sort of felt helpless. And it was a crushing victory for England for India. 151 runs, it was that feeling of just changing round so quickly. And you could sense it happening as well. Once they got those two early wickets, you could sense England were right on the back foot psychologically as well.
They started and finished the match superbly, India, didn't they? With basic, good quality, sensible, simple cricket. 126 for the first wicket, having been put into bat in difficult conditions. They played just serenely well, sticking to the basics. And then actually they finished the match off. Those last two wickets, the last two crucial wickets, Ollie Robinson, a slower ball from Bumrah around the wicket, hitting the stumps, LBW. And then Jimmy Anderson clean bowled by one that just shaved the off stump. So, you know, sticking to the basics, bowling at the wicket. And well, that's what England didn't do for a lot of the morning.
Yeah, well, I would say that it was a fantastic piece of bowling from Jasprit Bumrah to get rid of Robinson. Because Robinson played well. He really did. He gutsed it out with Butler. And there was a point where you thought England might survive. But Bumrah around the wicket. It was you know, he rolled his fingers over it, and it was almost like a fast off break. It was a lovely piece of bowling just to change the course of the game again. And that's what happened in that England innings. They had periods of where there was a lull, and you thought India not getting anywhere here, and suddenly bang bang, quick wickets. And that's what Bumrah was able to do, and then Siraj finished it off, and England bowled out in just over 50 overs. You talk about that softness to England's batting, and they seem as if they've got lots of problems. But they play. I think one of the points is they played so well for 3 days. I mean, they surprised us all. I was saying after the first day, I think India have got this. They will go on to win this Test match, and then England really, 3 days of really good sustained Test match cricket from England. But goodness me, didn't India come back and counterpunch brilliantly in that final day?
Mm. So let's hear from Joe Root and Virat Kohli actually on their thoughts about the match and where it went wrong for one and right for the other.
Even after that first hour, I felt like we were in command of the game, we were in control of things. And I think a lot falls on my shoulders. You know, as captain, tactically, I think I've done things slightly differently, given the time again. May have gone about things slightly differently. But I think from a bowling perspective throughout this game, the lack of everything into it, they performed very well. For large periods of that second innings, they were outstanding. And it's just disappointing that we didn't manage to close out that innings how we could have. I want to probably look back at it and look at some of the field placings, maybe the way that we bowled at them. I think maybe we could have looked at attacking the stumps a little bit more frequently, using the short ball as more of a surprise. I think as well, like I say, you've got to give them a bit of credit. They scored in some very unusual areas, but made it hard to set certain fields or conventional fields. And you're trying to manage taking wickets and not letting the game unravel and get away from you. So I just maybe would have taken a little bit more time and probably brought more modes of dismissal into the game sooner. Got to keep being better at building those big partnerships. You know, we did it well for periods in this game in the first innings. Me and Johnny put on a big 100 partnership. There's a good partnership between me and Mo and a couple of others as well. We just need to do those for longer and be better at making those really count. And when we get something going between two players, we've got to really make it last and be probably a little bit better at starting our innings as well, finding a way into the match with the bat.
Look, the partnership between Bumrah and Shami, first of all, to start the day was so good. When your bowlers go out there and show so much heart and put up a fight like that, it just pumps you up. The bowlers were waiting to have a crack at them. We knew that after lunch the declaration was going to come, and the bowlers were really keen and really looking forward to it, to go out there. And we knew each of them would have to probably bowl 10 or 12 overs, so they were really, really looking forward to going out there. We knew the pitch was a bit up and down, and an opportunity like this to win a test match doesn't always come, so it was we were all very, very keen and very, very excited as a pack. So yeah, to go out there and put up a performance like that is very special. I think this win will be right up there for me and for the team. I think, like I said, just coming to England, playing in Lords is always, there's always a hype about it, and there's always, as a team and as individuals, we look forward to it. And, especially after what happened in 2018, we lost really badly. So to come back here and win a game is, will obviously go down as one of our best games for me. And like you said, the bowlers have been relentless, not just in this innings, but even in the other, like the four innings that we played in this series, they've always, been right at the opposition and they've done the job for us. So this is the kind of performance the bowling unit has put up in the last 2-3 years. So we aren't surprised with what they've done today. That's why we also felt like we had a real chance of winning the test match with 60 overs to bowl.
That, of course, was KL Rahul, the man of the match for his excellent first inning century, and not Virat Kohli. LV Insurance's In With Heart tour took Lydia Greenway to a children's session in Bristol to see the good work being done by the project, supported by Fund for Runs, to attract young girls from the South Asian community to cricket. But that is not the only work being done with help from the initiative in the city. Bristol West Indian Phoenix CC is a well-established Caribbean cricket club based in the city, with three male teams turning out. Bristol West Indian Phoenix CC will be using the additional cash from Funds for Runs to now develop opportunities for girls cricket at the club and to create a welcoming environment.
So victory for India by 151 runs, ultimately a crushing victory and a psychologically damaging victory, perhaps. A, you know, really big blow struck by the circumstance of it on the final day. We both thought at the start of this series that India were the better side, that they would go on and win this series. I said I thought India would win the series by 2-1. How difficult a challenge do you think it is now for England against this Indian side with so many problems, really, in that England lineup, so many question marks against sort of various aspects of the team?
It is hard, but I don't think it's any harder than after the first test where England were sort of pretty much outplayed at Trent Bridge and had a bit of an escape with the rain on the last day. So, and I think, you know, one or two questions may have been answered in this test. I don't think that Dominic Sibley should play again. And it's interesting, actually, if you sit in the in any of the hospitality boxes with former England players, they just can't understand how Sibley... I mean, one former England player said, Dominic Sibley is the worst opener we've ever had, England opener we've ever had. I mean, he has made a Test 100, so it's perhaps a little bit harsh. But I thought, actually, the way that Hamid set up in the second innings today was promising. You know, the massive pressure, having got out first ball in the first innings and coming in at 0-1 in the second innings with, the bowlers absolutely on top of their game and India expectant. And he resisted. I know he did get out for 9, but he stayed in for quite a while and he looked, to me, competent. And without the pressure of the situation and in slightly more favourable conditions, say, I think I can see him being a success. So I thought that was one positive. The number three issue is going to be... So I'd move Hamid up to number two and then you've got to find a number three. Well, it's either Ollie Pope or David Milan for me. And both of those guys have got decent credentials. Root obviously played brilliantly. Bairstow, I thought, really shaped up well. Butler, I think he'll come good eventually. People probably... I mean, he's averaging something like nearly 50, Butler, in his last 10 tests or something. So he's actually got a reasonable recent record. And then after that, Curran... Sam Curran didn't have a good game. He might miss out. They do need... But I thought Moeing shaped well. There's a few things that England can be quite positive about, I think.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. Okay. I'm not sure there are loads of things to be positive about. I mean,
I sound like the England captain, don't I? Being positive after they've lost by 151 runs.
Well, you've got to try to think about being positive, haven't you? If you're in the England camp, of course you have. But I think there are so many issues with this England side, and it does start at the top of the order. I think one of the problems is that there are no sort of really obvious solutions, and perhaps if there were obvious solutions, they'd have tried them already. It's clear to me that Dominic Sibley has to be taken out of the side for now. Whether he comes back in the future, that remains to be seen. But he's so out of form, and when he is out of form, it looks horrible. He's not scoring any runs, that's happened for a long time now. He was part of their long-term strategy, opening with Rory Burns in Australia. To me, that doesn't look a viable one as we stand at the moment. Out for 0-11 in this game. We thought it was a big game for him. He hasn't produced. Hamid's been out 3 times in this Test match for 9 runs. So I don't see conclusive evidence yet in favour of Hamid. But of course, you can't just jettison.
Sorry, can you explain that? Why has he been out 3 times?
Well, because he was out for naught in the first innings, and he was dropped by Rohit Sharma at slip. So I, in a sense, I see that as an out. That catch should have been taken. It wasn't. I know, to be out, you obviously have to take a catch. What I'm saying is, in normal circumstances, he would have been out there early on for 4, and then, of course, he was LBW for 9. So, he offered opportunities to the bowlers. Okay, it was a big game for him under pressure, and you know he's obviously given him another chance, and he's been in decent form. But there have been so many down moments for him that I wonder if this, you know, he's absolutely ready at the moment to come back into this Test match side. Does there need to be a bit more evidence of his ability to, you know, score big in red ball cricket? Anyway, that's only my own view. I wish him well. I think there's a lot of goodwill towards him, but I don't see him going to the top of the order. When I see him going to the top of order, I don't put him there with a great deal of confidence and that feeling of that, you know, he's certain to do well. But give him a go, because I think they've got to take Sibley out. And then I think it's, you know, it probably is Ollie Pope at three or David Milan. Ollie Pope's not batted very much at three, but where does he fit into this England side if you've got Root, Bairstow, Butler and Moeen Ali? Butler, I thought, did really well today, actually. Showed a real steeliness. Mm. You talked about him, you know, not being in great form recently, but, you know, he really did tough it out. OK, he only made 25, but runs were irrelevant. He was so frustrated to get out the ninth wicket just before the end. So, there were some signs of optimism there. But the batting is a real issue. I mean, somewhere along the line in this series, Joe Root is not going to score big runs. Well, actually, he didn't in the second innings, did he? He got 33 and England lost the game. You know, if he'd stayed in, they might well have been able to save it. So... England's batting looks really vulnerable to me. Lots of problems there. However you shuffle around the deck chairs, it looks a pretty rocky deck to me. As far as the bowlers are concerned, Robinson excellent. Wood ran in and did well in this Test match.
Got some life out of a dead pitch at times, didn't he?
Yeah. But they're missing bowlers, aren't they? That's one of the problems. They're missing bowlers. You know, no Broad, no Archer. And no Stokes, no Stones.
No Wokes.
So, I mean, there was talk that Unless Chris... There was talk that Chris Wokes would miss the first two Test matches. But you know, has he got the bowling to be ready for a Test match? You can't just suddenly turn up and bowl because you're at your risk of injury. Presumably he is bowling, you know, in the nets or whatever, and ticking along, but is he going to have the cricket to be ready for a Test match? That's part of the problem, isn't it, with the way that the schedule is, with no Championship cricket until September. You know, it's a big problem. So it might be just roughly same again, but I think they've got to take Sibley out the side. It's inevitable, really.
But I guess we'll find out in due course. The next Test isn't for a few days, 9 days. There's a bit of a gap. In the meantime, lots of celebrations for India. And we should give the In With Heart Award today to someone who's a bit of an unsung hero for India, but he's emerging as someone who really has the passion and the ability to be a fantastic Test bowler, Mohammad Siraj, who finished the innings off today, finished the match off, took 8 wickets overall. And actually, he's not your kind of conventional seam and swing bowler, as someone like Mohammad Shami is, or even Ishant Sharma. He's got a bit more, I think of him more as an Indian type of bowler, because he's skiddier and he tries to hit the wicket and hit the stumps rather than trying to move it around. He does change his grip on the ball and bowl kind of wobble seam deliveries and things. And he's obviously learnt from watching the more precise operators like Anderson and Shami and so on with their variations. But he's improving with every game. He's at the batsman all the time. And it's so sort of exudes this sort of passion and zest. So... just you wouldn't be thinking of him as one of the top Indian strike bowlers 6 months ago, but he's proved it in this series so far. And so I think we give him the In With Heart Award today from LV Insurance. Do you agree?
Yeah, fantastic. Absolutely fantastic, Mohammad Siraj. Delighted for him. And he's got that lovely memento as well. I don't know if you noticed, at the end of the game, he knocked over Jimmy Anderson. And his first thought, he was sort of celebrating, he's running down the pitch. First thought, I want one of those stumps. And he ran down, he picked up one of the stumps and then ran off with it. You know, great, fantastic moment for a youngish bowler, a relatively inexperienced international bowler, to take that winning wicket in a Test match at Lords. And also, I mean, fantastic as well, the crowds over the last few days, 25,000 in today for this final day. I think they probably could have fitted a few more in as well. They said there were no tickets available, but the top tier, the tavern stand, was sort of mysteriously empty. Anyway, fantastic occasion. Over 100
a Mexican wave at Lourdes. How about that? I even participated in it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, you'll lose your place on the MCC committee by admitting that, won't you?
I got some of the other committee members to join in as well. But luckily, we weren't in the pavilion, which always gets the boos because they did. But even the members in the front row of the pavilion had a go, I think, those who could stand up.
Did they? So, I didn't notice that. I mean, normally it sweeps around 2/3 of the ground and then gets to the far end.
And a few members had a go as well. Yeah.
Oh, well, good on them. Although, actually, I'm not a huge fan of a Mexican wave. The cricket actually was good enough not to be distracted by a Mexican wave today. I mean, a brilliant day if you're an Indian supporter. And if you came along this morning feeling sort of a bit trepidatious about the day ahead and nervous, but then there's also a real sense of exuberance, really. First the batting and then the bowling. You know, one of sort of those great days for Indian cricket on tour. They won in Australia and they look well placed and good enough, as we suspected at the start of the series. They look good enough to win this series. I mean, they could easily be 2-0 up. We won't know about Trent Bridge, will we? They needed 150 odd on that final day, but they look good enough to win the series here. And Headingley next week's going to be a big challenge for England.
It's set the series up brilliantly, and as you say, England have got to find something from somewhere, because these Indian players are going to keep coming at them, both with bat and ball. So I think we're set for some lively cricket anyway coming up. England have to fight back somehow. Obviously, we'll be there at Headingley to bring you a report about each day's play. In the meantime, just to mark your card, this Saturday is the final of the 100. And so we'll be previewing that on Friday, when also the new issue of the Cricketer magazine comes out. And the new issue of the Cricketer magazine, actually, the cover, it says heart and soul. And basically, we've divided the cover up into Test, Village, County and the 100. So much cricket to watch and enjoy at the moment. And we'll be previewing, as I say, the final of the 100. We don't yet know who's in that final, but we'll be previewing that, men and women, on Friday, and of course back for the Headingley Test match, the LV Insurance third test of this series, next week from Wednesday onwards. So thanks for listening, and join you then.
Podcast Network.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.